Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hold it, don't nobody move. Before we start the show, let's talk about our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. You know the drill. The Bob Seska Show is almost entirely fueled by our Patreon subscribers, and we couldn't do 4+ shows a week without your generous financial support. If you dig what you hear today, please consider signing up for our Shadow Docket bonus show every Tuesday and Thursday for just $5 per month. Used to be called the Postmortem Show, but with the support of our existing subscribers, we changed the name to The Shadow Docket. I guess not a lot of Latin fans out there. Same show, same exclusive content, but an all new name. Again, that's $5 per month at BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. And now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
We could not talk or talk forever and still find things to not talk about.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, September 15, 2021, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, how you doing? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Day 237 of the Biden-Harris administration, 4 to 19 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska and on Twitter at BobSeska_go. Okay, so we're talking with my friend Sean Phillips today. Sean is a fitness expert, bodybuilder, bike rider, and the author of the book Strength for Life. You might remember reading about his brother Bill Phillips a couple of weeks ago. Bill's also a bodybuilder who wrote the best-selling fitness book of all time, Body for Life. And this year, Bill suffered from a severe case of long-haul COVID, which landed him in a medically induced coma. So today we're going to talk with Sean about his brother's battle with COVID, as well as Sean's experience with testing positive himself. And of course, we're going to talk about fitness, hormone replacement, bike riding, sustainability with your exercise routine, and so much more. Meantime, if you can, please help support this show by subscribing to our bonus content at BobSeskaShow.com. So seriously, stick around for this one. Sean is a great guy. He's got an incredible philosophy of life. You're going to learn so much here today. So here we go. My conversation with the great Sean Phillips. God, you know, it occurred to me this morning, we've known each other forever. I was drinking full strength shakes and bike riding in my full strength cycling jersey 11 years ago. It seems like I was a completely different human being 11 years ago. That's
I know. I catch those memories on Facebook every once in a while. I'm like, good God, man. And then to go through the 4 years of the 4 years that keeps lingering like a bad fart.
How you doing overall in terms of coping with the last 4 years? One of the things we've been talking about quite a bit is, post-traumatic stress. We're dealing with not only the Trump administration, but how it ended. That last year was horrendous.
Yeah, I'm coping. I mean, it's the tripling down effect of adding to all of this insanity, a planet crippling pandemic being led by an imbecile who wants to kill people, combined with the fact that right at the peak of the onset of COVID and the quarantine, I tore my Achilles. So I lost my bike. I lost my gym. I lost everything. Right?
God, how the hell did you do that? How does someone tear their Achilles tendon? That sounds insanely painful.
Yeah. Well, got my son a really cool Beamer, like a, you know, I don't know if you know BMW as well, but I got him an E46 3 Series 2005, the last year. Mm-hmm. Beautiful car. Fuel pump went out, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Christmas Eve, I decided to push it off the road because, you know, I still have good, strong quads.
Yeah.
But being over 50 doesn't help your Achilles at all. So.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. So you're pushing your son's car and,
yeah,
and it just popped. It just went.
Yeah. I thought my foot slipped out of the shoe, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm wearing Converse, right? You know, and I look down and my foot's still in the shoe and I'm like, what's that? And then all of a sudden the pain hits you.
God, that's got to be well, hard.
It was literally the worst of times. I mean, first of all, you know, I'll back up and give it a quick summary, which is, you know, and I, as I put in some of my show notes is, you know me, Baba's, I'm fitness guy, I'm shake guy, I'm protein guy, you know, and I'm, you know, conscious awareness guy, but I still wasn't a political hack. You know, I mean, I took politics, you know,
yeah,
kind of like I take my beer. I like to taste a little bit of everything, right?
Well, that's, you know, kind of how we were introduced to each other. I think we found each other through politics. Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you know, I just started. You know, I saw the dread and the possible trauma of who this buffoon was, mm-hmm. right? And that triggered all my alarms. So I got really, you know, deeply vested in it, right? You know, and you know, became extremely aware. Of course, with that comes the losing of many friends and family and all that crap, right?
Yeah.
Because there's shit I can't take.
You know, sure. Well, let's talk about your brother, Bill Phillips. He's a world-renowned fitness expert, bodybuilder, and despite all of that, he made national news last month. I think we all saw it on social media due to this severe battle with COVID that landed him in a medically induced coma. He lost 50 pounds of muscle mass in the breast. 70 pounds.
70 pounds. Well, yeah.
First things first, how is he doing today?
He's doing much better. Yeah. I mean, he's out of the hospital. He's still on limited oxygen. You know, I mean, he's still fucked up, you know? I mean, it's like a lot of people see him on social media and they'll say that thing, oh, I'm so glad Bill's okay. And I'm like, well, it depends on what you say okay is, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, I don't know if you caught two things about his event, which is a lot of people and a lot of media that picked it up because it ran through like 300 newspapers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all over the world. You know, I mean, he's the author of the best-selling fitness book in history, Body for Life, you know?
Yep, incredible.
We're talking about 10 million sales, you know, units sold. You know, a lot of people didn't pick up on the story that he'd had COVID before, right? So he had antibodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So his not getting a vaccine wasn't being vaccine resistant. It was, oh, I've already been tested for antibodies, right?
Right. And so he was hearing through the news, through the epidemiologist, that if you've had COVID already, you've got the antibodies, but he wasn't getting the message about, well, it's probably on the safe side to get a vaccine on top of having the antibodies.
Yeah. So you got, you know, what I've seen is antibodies might last 6 months or something like that. They don't know for sure, but it's certainly not 18 months because he was one of the first cases in America.
Yeah. January 2020. Yeah. Was he even aware at that point that it was coronavirus?
No, he didn't know it was COVID. They got caught in SeaTac Airport, Seattle, right?
Yeah.
On the last weekend before New Year's Eve for 12 hours, which is right where the virus came in from China, right?
Jesus.
So about 10 days later, they were down for a month or 6 weeks. You know, my brother coughed so hard he broke a couple ribs. And,
oh,
you know,
my fevers. God. Wow. Yeah.
But they had no idea what they were suffering from because no one knew, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when COVID hit, you know, the same time he's down, I'm tearing my Achilles. So we're both really doing well. The
Phillips boys are down. Holy God.
Yeah, they're down.
Yeah.
And so we didn't know anything. And then finally, when it came out, they got their COVID antibody test. And they had antibodies and yada, yada. Mm-hmm. Right? So we go along, move along, you know, comes 18 months later and, you know, he's going to the Nuggets playoff games and stuff, you know, thinking he's immune and stuff. And then all of a sudden he starts getting sick and I'm running him food over the house because I'm, you know, I've got both my vaccinations, right?
Yeah.
And I was probably 36 hours after visiting him and I'm sitting around and I can't sleep. And I go, that's weird, right? You know, you just can't sleep.
Right,
it's like something's wrong.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe I'll eat a little ice cream. Sometimes carbohydrates will knock you out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I go get this ice cream and I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, I feel cold, but I don't taste anything.
Oh, no. Right.
So I walk over, pick up my aromatherapies. I run it under my nose. I'm like, eucalyptus? Nothing. Nothing.
Jesus. Yes.
So now I've got a breakthrough case, right?
Unbelievable. And which two vaccines did you have? Did you have the Moderna or Pfizer?
I had Pfizer.
Wow.
One thing I picked up on, and this might be an interesting note to people, which is, I didn't realize until I did some studying on it, that they don't consider you fully vaccinated till 14 days post your second shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I was 10 days post second shot, right?
Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, yeah.
The heartbreaking thing, I just want to jump in here, Sean. The heartbreaking thing about that is you were doing all the right things. You were doing
everything right.
Exactly.
Dude.
And you ended up getting it like seconds before the deadline, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. But here's an testament to the vaccines, which is, you know, so Bill ends up, you know, going to the hospital. His oxygen level is 51 when he gets to the hospital, right?
Wow.
You know, his lips are black and blue. They had to intubate him within 5 minutes or he would have died. The doctors gave him 1% chance of survival.
Is this before you were testing positive or after?
We got it about the same time.
At the same time.
Within
days
of each other, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, just within days of each other. So, you know, so he's going through that, which, you know, is hell on all of us because that's how my dad died on a ventilator, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I'm having PTSD on that. And wow. it's just hell. And at the same time, you know, I've got my own things, but for me, it didn't hit my lungs. I didn't get the fever. I didn't end up at a doctor. Right. The big thing for me was I got severe fatigue, couldn't sleep, couldn't quite wake up, and I couldn't eat for a month.
Jesus.
I mean, I could not choke food down. There was nothing I could eat.
And see, that's got to be especially heartbreaking. And this is something I was planning on asking you this later in our conversation. But for someone who is so active in fitness and weight training and bike riding, anytime you're away from those things, does that just grind at your nerves? Like you're just watching yourself disintegrate in real time, right?
Yeah. I mean, literally, I unravel. I mean, I figured out 20 years ago that movement, strength training, exercise, my discovery of cycling, which we've talked about, mm-hmm. which was, you know, kind of accidental.
Yeah.
Is, you know, a part of my medicine. It's my medical, it's well-being. It's part of my antidepressant. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is what keeps me from unraveling.
Yep,
I mean,
we're all
on a razor's edge, man, mm-hmm. you know? And if we don't have that kind of movement and that ability to, you know, confront the resistance, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I integrated the whole feeling of how I approached Trumpism and the disinformation campaigns into my strength training model, right? Which mm-hmm. is, you know, like, because my Zen of strength practice is about looking at the resistance. Like, you know, when you're on a bike, you know, you're climbing a hill, mm-hmm. you know, hey, it hurts, it's hard, but you kind of look at it and go, oh, well, this is that thing that hurts, but does it really hurt? You know, you look straight into it instead of look away.
Yeah.
When you look away, you become weaker versus gaining the strength of confronting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I spent nine months off a bike, 9 months out of a gym, and basically could sit on the side of a road and make phone calls to my friends during the pandemic to make sure they weren't dead yet.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I was trying to stay alive by supporting other people, but man, I'll tell you what, that was some tough going.
God damn it. But you not know? Nearly as tough as Bill's ordeal.
Oh,
right?
God. Yeah. Oh my God. It's like, you know, if you see the video of him, you know, and you know, he's like me, he's eating well again and he's at home and he's, you know, doing his thing. And I've got him off the dumbbells and, you know, cause you know, he just, you know, like all of us, he just wants to go back to training. Right.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm like, oh dude, easy, bro.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I got him in some of those, you know, good old bands, home training bands. Right.
Yeah.
You know, just something resistance. It can be easier on your joints, get your nervous system reactivated, mm-hmm. take some self time, just be easy with it. I mean, I think from what the doctors say, he'll have a full recovery. His lungs don't look like they're scarred or damaged. He's had tons of tests. His blood tests are all coming back normal, but you know, he's still down a lot of weight. He's got a long ways to go. And, you know, it's a struggle. It's a struggle for all of us that mm-hmm. don't want to be, you know, incapacitated. And it starts to wear. I mean, you can come out with a positive attitude, but it starts wearing on you.
I mean, the thing that Bill's ordeal illustrates is something I fear the most. And it's also getting a very little coverage in the news. But let's talk about long haul COVID. What do we know about this so far? Why are some people getting COVID for extended periods of time? And then on top of that, we don't even know what the long-term damage is. We've heard stories about dementia and other forms of cardiovascular damage that can occur as a result of COVID. And we still don't have any of those answers yet because we're still so new. But what do we know at this point?
Well, I mean, one of the lines I like to use with my friends is interesting, because I would talk to somebody and not talk to them for a month and tell them where I'm at. And they'd be like, what, did the symptoms come back? And I said, symptoms come back. They never left, you know? Right. You know, I mean, I was 90 days, you know, in my own version of hell, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm gaining my strength back. But, you know, I've talked to a lot of friends that are, you know, fitness trainers, that guys that have been lifelong healthy, guys in their 40s. You know, I got a buddy that, you know, is 270 pounds at 8% body fat that now is 210 and can't eat, you know, yeah. and he's been 10 months free of the infection, but you know, he's got holes in his feet. He's got, you know, Jesus. Issues everywhere in his body. He's turning black around his ankles. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. Know? And in your case, I mean, you had, you know, a relatively bad case, but you were also bike riding and climbing yeah. mountains at high altitude, for God's sake. So you yeah. couldn't have been more fit. Your body couldn't have been more prepared to resist
prepared
something like that.
Yeah.
And yet you still had a relatively bad case, not nearly as yeah. bad as Bill, but a pretty
no,
bad
no.
case.
But there's nothing you can do about what you can't do anything about.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, you really can't. And as you know, like I say, one of the lines I use with people is, what does COVID do to people? I said, you know, it does 45 million different things to 45 million different people.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not really known. I mean, I have a lot of medical expert friends all over the world that I talk to, and, you know, we're starting to understand a little bit about it and the possibilities. You know, I've talked to Daniel Amen, you know, the brain, change your brain, change your life guy, you know, and he's got some ideas. I've talked to cardiologists, you know, people in the expert, you know, I mean, I'll say once again, you know, one of my, you know, not to get preachy, and I'm not trying to be one of, you know, the Tony Robbins of fitness, but, you know, movement matters, you know, moving yeah. your body, you know, as one of the things I put in, you know, kind of notes to myself is just how in the last year or two, the medical community has accepted the fact that the muscle on your body is an endocrine organ, meaning mm-hmm. it produces biochemicals enhancing your life, your brain function, your life function. You know, I mean, they've coined the term molecules of hope
yeah.
because movement provokes such a positive mental neurological state, and it releases, you know, anti-inflammatory biochemicals into your body. It enhances your brain function, and it gives you a sense of motivation, purpose, and positive nature. Just that means walking around the freaking block if that's what you can do. Right?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing about the endocrine system is it actually fuels muscle yes. as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So muscle, begets movement. And, you know, it's find your place and find your time. I mean, the first thing I did, you know, after losing 30 pounds is one, you know, my son who started training, he's 17 now, he finally started training, and he comes over and he looks at me, he's like, damn. I know.
Well, I mean, my God, your son has got to have like the best genetics in the world at this point, given his parents. You know what I mean?
You know, it was a funny story. He started training with his buddies, you know, because, you know, he would train with me a little bit, but just mm-hmm. didn't, you know, I don't know what it was. You know, I'm not going to get into it. Yeah. Right.
How old is he? How old is your boy now?
He'll be 18 in 2 months.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's freaky. It's really kind
yeah.
of crazy.
No kidding.
Yeah. 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 It's crazy. And, but he's training at this little gym kind of in Golden, you know, with his buddies, and there's a trainer there. Kenny's going to help us. Kenny. And he's been there for like 6-9 months. And this trainer, Kenny, and he's like, Kenny looks at him and goes, Nathaniel, Nate, you got good genetics, man. He's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to see a picture of my dad and my uncle? Yeah, here you go. Yeah.
He says, yeah. So my dad says, and he goes, well, who's your dad? And he says, Sean Phillips. And Nathaniel says, you could have scooped him off the floor.
Yeah, of course. Jesus,
he's like,
yeah.
He's like, that's your dad and you're asking me questions?
Kenny is just completely emasculated at that point. He's like, okay, I give up. Why don't you just call your dad?
Yeah, yeah, no. And I'm like, whatever works, man. You know, just get him in there. But yeah, so, you know, he's training. But, you know, I think the big thing about life, be it in fitness, be it in business, be it in personal, is I always go back to, you know, golf is such a great metaphor for life, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, you know, my favorite golf metaphor is you can play the ball where it lies. You can't play it on the green when it's in the fairway, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I lose 30 pounds and I have to just face where I'm at and get moving.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, the mental side of that too is something that we really haven't explored yet. We haven't really confronted how we deal with that emotionally, how we deal with that in the long run, the fact that we fell prey to this pandemic and, you know, maybe in some cases gave it to someone else that we really care yeah. about. I mean, how do you, just in general, how do we
well
come out of that emotionally?
Well, and I think, you know, there comes back to that whole model I use, the Zen of Strength. You know, Zen, you know, the term Zen really means to confront reality without having to put it in a box, right? So it's not an extrinsic reality, it's an experience of reality. So if I look at it and feel it from the inside out versus the outside in, that's the confrontation. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the seeing it for what it is and really embracing it. And I think the key thing is don't look away, but look forward into it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, because what we look away from enhances and gets stronger and makes us, you know, more fearful and more. So there's that part of confrontation, and that's part of what exercise can bring. But exercise also brings me mental well-being. And so when I was absent of my ability to move, you know, I used support of others, calling. I probably called you 3-4 times just I'll just sit and ring the phone, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Which is usually what happens when you call me, because I like, what is that noise that my phone's making? Does that mean I have to talk into it? Is that what I do with this thing?
That's what I'll text people sometimes. Buddy will call and leave a voice message, and I'll text my good. Did you leave me a voicemail? Because I don't listen to those.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to spell voicemail anymore.
I know. It's funny, but yeah, I mean, it really is a challenge. It's a severe challenge. I mean, there's a resilience piece. There's a, you know, like some of my buddies that are really suffering the long haul. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, I've got some residual things, you know, some things that aren't healing quite right. I've got some weird stuff on my arms. Like every time I scratch my arms when I'm riding, I start bleeding everywhere. I'm like, what the hell is that?
Wait, what? How does that happen? Do you know what that is? Is that part of COVID or is that something else?
It seems part of COVID.
Jesus.
I talked to a doctor friend of mine in Thailand who had COVID and stuff. And he's like, he gets these really weird itchy arms at night and stuff. Hmm. And like, I know I've been training with some things that scrape my arms and stuff, but man, I keep getting these cuts all over me. And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's just like, it's just weird. You know, I mean, it's just the weirdness that, you know, so what can you do? You can eat well, you can exercise, you can get your sleep. I mean, sleep begets it all, right?
Right. Recovery. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, recovery. I mean, we can't be mentally well if we're not getting our sleep, and that's hard as hell to do. I mean, some of my COVID long haul friends are like, I can't go to sleep when I can't wake up, you know? And I'm like, man, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I've looked at a lot of good sleep protocols, and, you know, I'll give people who don't know one of the simplest tips on earth, which is first thing in the morning, when you get up, you know, it's always best to get up at the same time, but get outside without sunglasses on, get 5 to 10 minutes of sun, whether that's walking, jump roping, just sitting, moving a little bit of movement, a little bit of blue light activation in the morning will set the circadian rhythms in order.
Yeah. And especially now with isolation, where people are inside a whole lot more than they used to be. Yeah. That's super important. I mean, specifically, what do you think saved Bill's life? It's got to be, I mean, that muscle mass was a lot.
Well, the doctor said that over and over and over. If he didn't have the muscle to sacrifice, because it literally stripped the calcium. I mean, one of the things that recovery in your body wants is it strips calcium. It literally stripped calcium from his bones, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they can feed you through it too, but they can't feed you enough. They can't give you enough nutrients, right? So not only was he ventilated for 6 or 8 weeks, you know, he had a tracheotomy times, right? You know, because that's deeper that's even more severe than a ventilator.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. They're slicing into your neck. That's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So his vocal. So he's got, you know, it's harder for him to eat sometimes and stuff because of all that damage and scar tissue and stuff. But I have talked to at least 25 nurses and doctors and stuff, and no one has ever, ever reported someone surviving what he went through.
Incredible. So it may have been that 70 pounds of muscle mass, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the doctors would say if it hadn't been for the muscle and the strength he had to sacrifice, because most people go in there, you know, moderately, let's just assume moderately out of shape or in moderate shape. They have a little bit of muscle, a little bit of fat. The fat doesn't do them any good. You know, you're not going to.
Right.
It's a little bit of calories, but not much use. But the muscle becomes a donor for living, and they run out of steam in 14 days and are dead.
Yeah. Yeah. God,
that's the way it goes, you know, and it's just like there's nothing you can do. But they kept, and Bill kept fighting, you know, a couple of times he'd grab a doctor and try to punch him and stuff like that. So.
God, yeah, not a good way to make friends among the medical staff, huh?
Well, they understand what he's going through, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Like they kind of got it, you know, it's like, and they've seen it, you know, it's like, you know, you're in a haze, you're in a half coma or half conscious, and you just want the hell out, you know?
Yeah.
So, it was hard. And, you know, I'd go up finally when he was able to get in the wheelchair and go down and we could watch a Bronco game or something. I'd go up and sit and we'd eat and chat and move and, you know, and hang out and stuff. And, you know, it's getting into hospital right now. It's easier to get into Fort Knox.
Have you guys always been close? Have you and Bill always been sort of on similar tracks?
Well, I mean, we've mirrored each other back and forth. You know, we're 1 year apart. You know, he's 1 year younger than me.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of like having a twin, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, we have our issues and we've had our battles and we've fought about shit over the years, but, you know, we've off and on, we basically worked together since, you know, well, long before, since the late 80s, probably in some capacity. And then we launched Metrics in 1990 and then EAS in 95. And, you know, we've, you know, at some level or another been working together for 30 some years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so did you start bodybuilding around the same time?
Yeah. Yeah. We both started training like age 12 or 13.
Age 12 or 13, huh? Is that something that you would recommend to other parents who may have kids who are interested in getting into it at that age, starting that young?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, everybody's got their own thing, you know, and I do believe that strength training adds to, you know, a mental strength, a resolve, a sense of confidence, you know, a presence. You know, we were fortunate in junior high to have a former NFL linebacker from the Redskins who was our gym coach, right?
Oh, who was your gym coach?
Fred, it'll come to me.
Sorry, I didn't mean to stump you on that one.
Yeah, no, it starts with an H.
Fred, I was thinking, Fred, like, was Dexter Manley your, coach in high school?
No. Yeah, I'll have to look at I know his name. Mr. Haskins, Fred Haskins. Or
Gotcha. I don't recognize the name. Yeah.
No, he was, you know, probably played 4 or 5 years as a linebacker, you know, but he was just at that time he was probably, you know, he seemed old. He was probably mid 50s, but super shape, you know, and stuff. And we had a good gym and he just promoted strength training all yin yang, right?
Yeah, sure.
You know,
sure.
And so we were always setting records and powerlifting and getting into, you know, a lot of people always say, well, you were small in high school. And I'm like, I graduated high school at 182 pounds. That wasn't small.
No, absolutely. And how tall are you, Sean?
5'9".
5'9", 182 pounds. That's not bad. Was your dad a big guy too, or?
No, kind of a lean tennis player. Yeah. You know, mom's got a little bit of bigger bone structure. You know, it's just kind of like, I got the kind of, you know, like Bill got a thicker bodybuilding kind of a body, you know, a little more for pounding heavy weights. And I got kind of that combination of being sort of a mesomorph, which means a little ectomorph, a little endomorph, ability to build muscle, but to stay lean, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And people always look at my photo shot, you know, my big, you know, photo shoots and stuff. And they go like, man, you look like you're 240 there. And I'm like, nope, 190.
I mean, you had, there's a derogatory term in the YouTube communities called dick skin. I mean, you basically had, just, you were so incredibly lean. In fact, you know what? Correct me if I'm wrong, but you seem to have been on a slightly different track with bodybuilding than your brother. And I kind of peg you in the category of men's physique. That's sort of one of the newer bodybuilding categories. It's bodybuilding, but more in terms of a leaner, athletic, aesthetic-looking physique, rather than the mass monsters of the men's open category.
Oh, right? Yeah. I got no use for the mass monster thing. Yeah. And it was like, you know, I mean, I'm considered in most of the circles the godfather of the physique, right?
Oh, right. You okay. Know? So I was correct. I was thinking, I've been thinking that all along. I was like, boy, Sean, totally men's physique. And so, but that's really what that's sort of your track.
Yeah. They didn't have that category when I was, you know, that age, you know, and, you know, 20 years ago, that was not in existence. So, you know, I had no place to compete. So I just did my photo shoots. Right.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, like I was doing a retreat, kind of a, you know, post-COVID, pre-COVID business retreat down in Colorado Springs. I ran into a guy who's a physique competitor down there, and he's, you know, he's pretty damn big really for physique competitor, but really nice, smart guy. He's got a master's degree, you know, he's doing his stuff. And I got introduced to him and I said, hey, and we were talking. He's like, that's funny. He goes, just yesterday, my coach took me through an hour and a half of consulting on your photos and your poses and everything else to get the perfect physique.
Incredible. Okay, short break. We'll be back right after these words.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Seska Show.
I mean, what has changed the most about the fitness industry since you were doing photo shoots and you were super duper active? I mean, I imagine quite a bit has changed just in the past couple of decades, huh?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that there's, you know, everything has its ups and its downsides. A lot of it is, you know, I mean, the reason I could understand the Trump train and the political landscape as well as I could is because I've lived inside that sort of, you know, BS bullshit circle of slewing crap and racing to the bottom, you know, inside the fitness industry, right?
Yeah.
You know, got to sell more and more for less and less until I can make all the money in the world for nothing at all, right?
That's right, right.
You know, and it's, you know, it's you know, there's always been a snake oil kind of theme that runs at the edges, but it's kind of moved to the middle, you know?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And now you're the outlier if you're just, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, you know, as I've evolved, it's like, I mean, it's just things I can't do. I mean, I just can't do it. I can't steal money from people. I can't sell products that don't work. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, testosterone boosters all over the TV channel all night, hours of the night and day, you know, and it's like, they don't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, and you know, they don't work and the mm-hmm. science shows they don't work, but it, you guys don't have any problem selling it. You know, yeah. They just don't have any problem, you know?
And that was one of the first things I noticed about you in terms of your philosophy, specifically when it came to some of the things like supplements and so on,
yeah.
That you were very much and still are a straight shooter when it comes to that. I remember asking you about creatine and you were like, well, here, this is the creatine I recommend because they don't put a lot of extra crap in there. It's just pure creatine. And that was really great advice because you could have steered me towards some sort of massive, you know, explode, you know, kind of a one of those things that look really fancy on the shelf, but are just loaded with other kinds of crap in there.
Well, and something that costs you $80 a month versus buying a $20 bottle of German creatine and using it for three months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll last 12 weeks, you know?
Yeah.
So you basically, you're spending $7 a month on creatine versus 75, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just, you know, I don't have any room in my life to be a bullshit artist. It just don't.
Yeah. And that's something that I so appreciate. And, you know, men's bodybuilding has become so huge on YouTube. I was mentioning YouTube earlier.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of my favorite YouTube channels to watch is they're sort of like descendants of you and Bill, because they're these brothers who I think they live in Oregon or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have a really entertaining fitness channel on YouTube, the Buff Dudes. But you know, I can say without a doubt, personally, as a hard gainer, because I'm tall, I've got small wrists, I've never quite got my training right until I found these channels. And then I also became friends with you, and I would constantly pester you with questions about what I was doing or what I should do or what I shouldn't do. I mean, have you ever considered your own men's fitness channel on YouTube, or is it already too crowded a space?
No, I mean, I really, you know, Bob, I mean, I clearly used the Trump era as a kind of a personal reset. I did many things, like, you know, I just, you know, I was spinning so many plates and so many brands and so many directions. It was like, you know, I mean, I'm a creative tour de force, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I can brand, I can market, I can sell, I can build technologies, I can do all of it. But I was hosting 20 freaking websites. I got 400 domains, you know, And, you know, so when Trump came into, you know, power, I just kind of said, you know what, I'm going to do a soul cleanse. And that means, you know, mostly taking off Facebook, because I couldn't deal with the Facebook kind of energy. Right.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, but I could go to Twitter, and I always call Twitter the bucket over my head that I can scream bloody murder into and nobody cares. Right.
That's a great way to look at it. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and you make these new friends and I talked to Carl Reiner I chatted with Carl Reiner the day before he died on Twitter. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just weird stuff that happens. You know, I mean, I would talk to Chuck Yeager, you know,
it's incredible. Like, life is so weird, isn't it? When you get into social media, things happen that were never expected. Absolutely. It's like talking to Carl Reiner, for God's sake.
I know. It's just wild. You know, I mean, I was talking with Ron Howard the other day about Andy Griffith's show. You know, I'm like,
it's incredible.
I'm like, what the hell? You know, my Ted Lasso fascination, you know, becomes me, you know, I mean, just love that shit. You know,
Like, that's right up your alley. The whole philosophy of Ted Lasso seems like tailor made for the Sean Phillips philosophy. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like I always, you know, my first feeling of Ted Lasso was it's Andy Griffith meets Seinfeld.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's got all the goodness and all the excellent writing and all the skillfulness of the Andy Griffith Show, and it's got that comedic, you know, benign humor of a Seinfeld. You know,
yeah,
it's not, you know, so it's it's kind of that mix. But, you know, so I mean, I'm certainly back in, you know, I mean, my new book is going to be all the Zen of Strength, you know, the Joy of Movement kind of model. And, you know, I'm going to go into that, you know, really kind of the over 40, over 50, you know, productive, lifelong, you know, it's not that I want to lose the origins of the muscle. It's mm-hmm. like you want to integrate it into the longevity model, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In sustainability. And it's like, you know, I remember when I was 35 and I said, you know, the sooner people understand and make friends with strength training, with make friends with the resistance to resistance, right, the better off they will be for their entire lives. Because I said, I'd hate to be 60, 70 years old and having to try to figure out what a goddamn dumbbell curl is for the first time, right?
Yes, of course. You know,
I mean, how freaking awkward that would feel and mm-hmm. how difficult that'd be. So the sooner a person can find their way into it, you know, the sooner you can understand what your blood work looks like, what your health looks like from the inside out, what your hormone profiles look like, and you can make some of the simple changes. You know, I'm not talking about radicalization, but I, you know, I do, you know, as you know, with my writings, everything stems from awareness, consciousness, from really an integral look at your body, mind, and spiritual self, not mm-hmm. from a religious standpoint, but, you know, your beingness, you mm-hmm. know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Be here, you know? So, you know, I mean, that's kind of my integrated wholeness. And I'm, you know, so I've used the Trump worlds as a reset. I've mm-hmm. eliminated a bunch of junk out of my life and I'm in the relaunch. So one of the things I was going to say is like, I got nothing to sell anybody right now. I got no place to go. Just find me on Medium.
Well, I think the book that you're planning, and I guess you're in the process of writing it now. Is that where it is?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like that approach and the theme of that book is extraordinarily important. And I think one of the things that is most important about it that I've noticed is people who get into fitness, especially if they're like us and they're older than 50, and they land on something that is completely unsustainable, that they can only do for a short period of time before they crap out or they get injured or something bad happens that they can't keep doing it. It just becomes too grueling, maybe in some cases. Yeah. But your philosophy stems more from finding an exercise routine that is sustainable in the long run. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of my favorite books, George Leonard on mastery, you know, and the whole concept of mastery to people of the developing mind believe that it's the constant ascension to ever greater greatness, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But what George Leonard defines mastery is long periods of plateaus, a flat line, and the ability to tolerate the flatlining of your training, your life, and your evolution. Right?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So embracing, you know, the doingness. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, one of the edicts that I preach to people when it comes to finding something to do is a lot of trainers, a lot of experts, a lot of psychologists will say, find something you love. Right. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you don't know what the hell you love until you actually do it beyond the point of you're hating it. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know me, I come from strength training. I'm not an endurance athlete. So when I got on a bike, I was like, every single pedal stroke was fuck this shit. Right.
Yeah. You know? I know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I made a commitment to a friend to do the triple bypass, which you can't fake, right?
Yeah. Explain what the triple bypass is.
That's a 125-mile ride from Evergreen to Beaver Creek, Colorado, over three mountain passes up to 13,900 feet at one of them. You know, wow. So it's basically 14,000 vertical feet, 125 miles in one day, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jesus.
And you know, I mean, at altitude, at severe altitude, right? Mm-hmm. You know, facing snow, wind, rain, every time it'll snow on one of the passes, right?
Yeah.
And that's in the middle of July. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I made a commitment to do this and I basically went out and I rode with community. I rode with friends. I got the support. I let them support me until I got to the point where I was actually, okay, I kind of get this, right? And it took me a month, took me 6 weeks. And then I went from resistance into, okay, I can get better at this. This kind of feels good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, I made a goal. I said, once I could do this one loop in a certain time frame, I'll buy myself a new bike. Right. I'm still riding that freaking bike I bought.
Oh, that's incredible. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I mean, it's like, so when I lost all this weight from COVID, you know, and I needed to get my, you know, my mojo back, I said, the first thing I'm going to do is take advantage of my power to strength weight ratio. Right. I'm going to go ride.
And there's something that's so incredibly attractive about bike riding that I didn't expect when I first started. Improving my fitness and going faster on my bike became an obsession and still is an obsession. But at the same time, there's this other side to it that has nothing to do with fitness. It has everything to do, for me, it's the adventure, the journey of it, where every time I'm out there, it's like I'm paving new roads and finding new ways around and seeing new things that I didn't see before and experiencing the scenic splendor of the areas that are just in our backyard that we never actually see at human speed. And so that was so incredibly and still is incredibly attractive to me and continues to motivate me to want to do it. And I feel like bike riding, even more than weight training, is that thing that I discovered that is sustainable over the long run. I hope to continue to be bike riding until, you know, I can no longer sit on a bicycle upright. I hope, maybe the next 30 years of bike riding, I'm looking forward to.
I can tell you, out here in Colorado, there's a team of, 70s and 80-year-old cyclists that will just blow my doors off, you know?
Yeah.
They're still riding like nobody's business. I remember when I went to my first time trial and I look over and there's a guy on a trainer warming up with his speed helmet on. He's about 80 years old. And I'm like, what in the living? He's on a $20,000 bike. I'm like, well, what the hell?
Oh, man. Nope. Yeah. And then you feel completely deflated when he blows past you after your 2 minute head start. Right.
I know. It's like, but I appreciate what you're saying with what I enjoy is getting out there, covering the terrain, and what I can do. Like if I'm in a stationary, like a treadmill or an indoor bike or something, you know, if I could do 30 or 45 minutes, I mean, that's like a freaking, you know, that's everything, you know.
Yeah.
I can go out on my bike, you know. 2 days ago, I did 35 miles in 2 hours and just, you know, it's like, okay, man, you know, I'm out here, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm experiencing the world. And, you know, one of the things, like you said, till I can no longer balance, when I got on, so I went through 8 hard weeks of COVID, you know, hard in a relative sense, not hard like Bill went through, you know, my own little hellscape, right? And I went to get back on my bike. And I mean, I couldn't balance. I moved my head and everything looked like a time-lapse photography. I'd be like, oh my God. But I said, I'm going to ride anyway. I'm just going to ride. I'm just going to do 8 miles. I'm going to do something. But what it did is it started getting my body back in sync, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I got a little better, a little better, a little better. And then like, you know, I've been back on the bike three, maybe four weeks or something like that. Yesterday, you know, I have my one big mountain ride, which is like 5 miles and 2,000 vertical feet, right?
Oh, incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, that's my kind of my major, like when I'm there and I've been riding part of it or half of it or something. And the other day I just, you know, I rode all the way from home over to the mountain and up the mountain, you know, without having to stop, take a knee or take a breath, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I can start to feel it coming back. You know, you start to feel that, you know, you can feel that part, you know, in your legs when you're moving. And, you know, it is funny. And I've told you this before, but how many of my friends that grew up with me in bodybuilding and strength training have gone to cycling because the two have a real crossover, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, there's this relationship, and Lance Armstrong talks a lot about the relationship with suffering and pain is very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And there's that deep focus that creates that flow state. And you go beyond that part where you want to resist, where it kind of feels like hurting. And all of a sudden it starts to feel good. And then you get drawn into it. And now you're just in this flow state where it's like, you know, that's that Zen state of just being there. You know?
Oh, yeah. And that's what I love about a long climb is you get into a rhythm and suddenly you're finding that it's not as hard as you anticipated. It's not as it's difficult as hell. Make no mistake. Riding a bike uphill is the hardest thing that you can possibly do from an athletic point of view, I think. But at the same time, once you get into that rhythm, there is a Zen about it. There is a mantra aspect about it. The turnover of the pedals, even the sound of the wheels when it's really quiet, the sound of the wheels rolling over the asphalt, that sound even there's something that's very soothing about it. I think of when we're babies, a lot of times our parents will, if we can't get to sleep, our parents will take us on a ride in the car. And the sound of the car, that sort of white noise or whatever you would call it, soothes your mind to the point where as a baby, you can fall asleep. And I get the same sense when I'm on a bicycle and I'm riding at a certain pace uphill. It's challenging, but there's something that's so therapeutic about that, Sean. And I'm sure you've experienced the same thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's all the sanity in the world. It's releasing all the things you want from movement, all the biochemicals, all the neurochemicals. It's making you stronger, harder. It's good for your heart. It's good for your lungs. I mean, one of the things I do is, you know, I focus on turning circles, right? Turning circles, which means keeps your pedal going round. Don't get squares. And breathing, like I try to make sure I exhale all the carbon dioxide out of my lungs so I can bring in a big fresh air, right? You know, and just get into that rhythm. And, you know, going back to something you spoke about a minute ago, which is sustainability, one of the things I have to constantly remind myself about riding is, and this is because of my strength training background. It's like, what I want to do is get over to the goddamn mountain as fast as possible so I can just beat the living crap out of myself climbing the mountain, right?
Exactly. There's a masochistic aspect about bike riding too.
But then it's understanding again, and I have to do this every year, every season, reminding myself that professional cyclists spend 80% of their training time in zone two, which means it's called just doing the miles, right? Zone two means you can speak and talk to somebody. Your heart rate's 125 to 135. It's tolerable. And it doesn't seem like work, but it's actually laying down all that you need for your cardiovascular wellness. And it's doing it from a different standpoint than the higher intensity of climbing. So it's a, you know, it's a mix of both, but I think that's where the, you know, like when I've, you know, from Body for Life and Forever, from our bodybuilding background and for the need to do everything urgently, you know, HIIT, high intensity interval training, has been the, you know, the buzzword that Bill and I and millions of people have used for years. And, you know, as you get over 40, over 50, I tell people, you know, screw the HIIT, man, just sit down on the bike for 30, 40 minutes and, you know, be at a sustainable rate, you know, read a book, you know, breathe a little bit, but don't beat the crap out of yourself, you know?
Right, right. Well, I wish I knew that advice, because I that's my intention. Literally, my intention when I go out on my bicycle is to not only have a good time, but to beat the shit out of myself. I mean, that's always the goal. At some point, I need to beat the shit out of myself. There's something that it drags me out of my comfort zone and puts me into that frame of mind where, yeah, you know what? There is something about bike riding that's a little bit dangerous, or a lot, a lot dangerous in some cases. And I, you know, I've been hit by a car once already. In fact, I just got Lyme disease. I just got over Lyme disease
as a
consequence. I mean, I caught it really, really early when I still noticed that there was a, you know, the bullseye shape rash there. And so, I'm on antibiotics for that. But I mean, everything that could possibly happen to someone on a bicycle has happened to me at some point. So there is this danger aspect to it. But I kind of turn that into something positive insofar as my philosophy is, when I'm riding my bike, I feel happy to be alive. When I'm finished riding my bike, when I'm done riding my bike, I'm happy to be alive. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a sense of accomplishment that you can't really get any other way than to get on a bike, find yourself 30 miles from home with only your legs to power you back home, and to finally get there. You feel like you can, you know, bend spoons mentally or something like that.
I know. Yeah. Well, I get it. And I think, you know, you can do like, I have some zone two loops I do, and but they still have like some short, you know, bursty climbs in them, right? You know, so I can push those things, and then I can just keep a good 24, 25 mile an hour pace across the rollers, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and keep moving. And, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just a pleasure. I mean, you talk about hit by a car. I've gone over the hood before of a car.
Oh my God. Wow.
I thought I was going to go through the passenger window, right?
Jesus.
But I let out this tribal scream, right? And the woman driving the car heard me and slammed on the brakes. And I hip checked the front left fender, the passenger side fender, went over the hood, landed on the other side of the car, still clipped in.
Oh my God. So you dragged your whole bike over the car.
Incredible. And I was watching her, cause she had the stop sign. I didn't.
Yeah.
And I was watching it. And I, you know, I had that moment where I said to myself, this would be the worst time she could go. And right then she floored it. And I was like, oh man.
Oh, so she just took off.
Yeah. She didn't see me. And then when I landed on the other side of the car, she said to me, she got out of the car all panicked and said, you should have waved to get my attention or something. And
That one, right?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. And that's when you just leave, because I got nothing to say. Right?
See, I got nothing. I got this one as I'm laying prone in the middle of the street. The guy who hit me hovers over me and goes, geez, I didn't even see you. I was like, no, no shit, you didn't see me. That's why you hit me, because you didn't see me. Thank you for confirming that you weren't paying attention to the 6'4" man in the garish cycling clothes that was right next to you a second ago.
I know. Part of that challenge of survival and getting home is, and I'm sure you're like this now, especially, is like, I watch every driver. I just watch them.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and I'm like on my, you know, I learned that from riding a motorcycle, which I don't do anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you know, yesterday I come down this kind of windy road on the way home, and it's a little two lane, you know, winder where there's a lot of bikes and stuff. But I ran into two drivers who came up to the intersection to merge onto this road, looked to the way away from me and never looked at me. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I stopped and let them turn. And then they never even saw me. They never looked at me ever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not going to pull cross in front of them because they're going to floor it right when I'm in front of them. You know, and I just stop. I just go, okay, move on.
Yeah.
You know, another one of my things is like when I pulled an intersection, you're at a four-way stop and the car thinks they're being nice by waving you forward. I'm like, uh-uh.
Yeah. Yes, please.
You were there
do.
First.
Yeah. Yep,
you were there first. Yeah.
I'm going to pull out and then suddenly the car's going to think they were supposed to go first and then I'm going to get hit. That's how it seems to work out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I try to ride, like, you know, I ride my roads where there's a lot of bikes. I ride where, you know, occasionally I'll get on a Sunday and want to go hit my favorite mountain or something. And I get about 10 feet up there and I realize it's tourist day and everybody's visiting from out of state. And I'm like, I'm out of here. We'll do this.
Yes, I know Bad exactly idea. What you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, speaking of injuries, what's your take on CrossFit? I mean, it seems like when I think of sustainability, it seems like something that is, you know, it can be rewarding in the short run, but in the long run, it seems like a recipe for injury. I don't know. That's just my outside opinion.
Well, and I mean, I think there's a lot of that in there. I mean, inherently built in. I always, you know, my last favorite girlfriend, which I'm not dating at the moment, but she did a lot of body weight and movement training. And I always called it CrossFit without the stupid, right?
CrossFit without the stupid, implying that a lot of CrossFit has a lot of stupid.
And I mean, you know, things like Olympic lifts, like clean and jerk and stuff like that. I mean, 3% of the population have the bone structure to tolerate it, right?
Yeah, right.
And there's very little, you know, really transcendent benefit to it, but it's going to break your joints. Like, no, you know, I mean, being over 50 with, you know, two or three joints in my bodies, which could, you know, I could change, you know, or replace, right? It's like, man, I just want no part of that whoopass, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'll give you what I think the CrossFit mojo is, what really works. And it kind of is part of my, what's the problem with Peloton, you know, the great Peloton movement.
Oh, right.
Indoor
yeah.
cycling,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the joy of CrossFit is the community. And what keeps you coming back is the social connection and the accountability and the belongingness. It's belonging to a tribe.
That's
and
right.
If the human being is anything, they're tribal, right? I mean, which politics can show us right now, right?
Oh, sure.
I mean, you know, that GOP, that Republican movement is nothing but an emotional hijacking, right? A belonging to a group of insanity. Well, that's what CrossFit gives you, that tribe feeling and that social connection. What Peloton does is give you Facebook of fitness, the illusion of connecting to people, but that you're not really connected to, right?
Yeah.
And I believe that you need to get the hell out of your house. You know, I've gone back to going to a gym because I need to go to a gym because I need to be around people. You know, some of my best friends and some of my soul, you know, I don't go to bars really and hang out. I don't go to microbrews and sit and have a, you know, a Cheers beer, right? So I go to the gym and I check in with Eddie and how's his race car going? You know, what's George doing over there? How's things, you know? And so I got this kind of tribe of guys I know and like and appreciate. We don't hang out anywhere but at the gym, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's my social connection. You know?
Absolutely. Something we've certainly missed. I know I've missed it because I haven't gone to the gym since March 2020. I've been lifting right here in the room that I'm sitting in right now, which is my podcasting studio / gym is where I am right now. And I have to say, it's just not the same.
It's not the same. And I mean, you can do a lot with it. Mm. And, you know, when I've been post-recovery, you know, first of all, having been in isolation and quarantine, which, you know, sets off a lot of bad juju for me, you know, including, you know, depressive and, you know, I mean, I can, you know, I'm on the edge of depression, you know, I can get there if I'm not being social, if I'm not moving. Mm-hmm. And that's hell, you know, and you know, having come out of that and then getting COVID and having been isolated again for a month or two, it just was like the last thing I freaking needed, you know. Oh God. But I've taken to the movement back from my home. Do you have cables, like the rubbers and the bands and that kind of shit?
I don't, I just have dumbbells. I've got like so many dumbbells, I'm surprised my closet hasn't collapsed down to the floor, down to the people who live below us. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the power blocks are a great one, you know, that have at home, but the thing that I've gotten, you know, it's like I used to poo-poo this idea of running a cable or these bands or these things. But, you know, it's funny because my brother wouldn't take to them for a while. And I realized he wouldn't take to them because he didn't know what to do with them. Right. You know, when you've been training with dumbbells your whole life, you don't, you know, and I'm like, I've always been this kind of creative tour de force. Like, you can give me anything and I can work out with anything. Right.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Well, I've created all these cable movements that I can do, that I can train anything with these cables. And what I like about them is that they're a different sort of resistance, which is easier on your joint. It allows you to really focus on some of the muscle movement, some of the contraction. And, you know, I really think an integration, like a day or two of doing cables at home combined with a gym is the best world for me, you know? Mm-hmm.
Sure, sure. Yeah. And then going back to Peloton and that social aspect of it versus, you know, being in your home. And I found that riding station, like, and I've never used Peloton, but I have done stationary bike riding, and I find it to be painfully boring. Where you were talking about 45 minutes on a stationary bike, that's about as much as I can do before I want to gouge my eyeballs out from boredom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in the same way. I mean, I use a treadmill at the gym for warm up because I realized about once I hit 45 that if I do 15, 20 minutes of just really simple, slow cardio on a walking treadmill on an incline, it gets my blood flowing. And then my weight training becomes so much easier, right?
Yeah,
so I can engage in it. It's kind of like if you want to climb a hill on a bike, you need 20 minutes to 30 minutes of warm up first, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I don't think people get that these professional cyclists, okay, they're 22 years old. They spend an hour warming up before a 30-minute time trial, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I've noticed that.
Yeah. You got to get the engine heated up.
That's right.
So same thing with strength training. You go into strength training cold and you lift the dumbbell and you go, God, that hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. You know, it's just like, oh God. Ugh. You get the body sweating a little bit of movement and you can move.
Yeah.
But you know, the Pelotons works for a lot of people that aren't, you know, really innate cyclists because it's a stopgap. I'm not going to poo poo it because it's gotten people moving.
It's safer.
It's got a lot of stuff.
It's safer. It's You're safer. Not very little chance of injury on a Peloton.
Yeah. That's one of the things I was talking to a buddy the other day. He's like, well, what descent's your favorite in Colorado? And I'm like, none of them.
That's right. Oh, man, my biggest fear is going 40 miles an hour down a hill and suddenly getting the wobbles. That would be just the ultimate nightmare.
Well, I mean, I the mountain I ride on, I was going up it, gosh, when the USA Pro was here, like 4 years, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I watched a father, you know, a 42-year-old father get killed by a car. You know?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
The descent right into the freaking guy, passed somebody and went right into him. And so, you know, I come around those blind corners on the inside as slow as I can go.
Oh,
I can climb the mountain as fast as I can get down it. I'm not in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Right. Going downhill on a switchback descent is so nerve wracking because you're picking up all kinds of speed. And then you've got to manage that hairpin where there could be a car coming up around that hairpin bend at the switchback. And so
it's
terrifying to do that.
Yeah.
I give you lots of credit for managing that.
Yeah. Just taking it easy. But, you know, I mean, where appropriate, you know, I always encourage people to, you know, find a community, get out, like you said, you know, see the terrain, see the world, you know, maybe take your Peloton into the passion for cycling to some degree, you know, find your place, you know, and I think e-bikes have been a real converter for a lot of people, getting people moving, you know, it opens the world up for people who are quite in, you know, quite as committed to the cycling as you and I are, you know?
Right.
And it lets them cover some more space and still work on their fitness because you know, it requires you and the e-bike.
Well, you know, Sean, one of the things we've talked about on my After Party podcast quite a bit is women in our age group who have a hell of a time staying lean due to postmenopausal hormones.
Yeah.
Have you ever looked into why it's so difficult for women of a certain age to lose weight? Like, for example, Kimberly exercises more often than I do. I mean, she seems to have her whole routine really well dialed in. and she can't seem to shed much, not since she passed through menopause. It's been, you know, one grueling psychological disaster after another, where she's like, oh my God, yeah. I'm working my ass off, but I can't make any progress. Is this something that you've ever looked into or had any experience?
Well, with? I mean, I've certainly danced around it. I mean, you know, like I said, my favorite trainer, Carla, she's in her 50s and she's mm-hmm. managed to keep it, you know, under control and in shape. It's one thing I learned. It's like, I can't remember. There's the female body, or there's a book written probably 20 years ago. And it mm-hmm. was all about the growth of the female, you know, hormone system and lifelong, you know, and it studied, I got to about age 15 and I thought I was reading a Stephen King novel. I was like, oh, it's like, you look at men, it's like, you know, it's like a light switch, testosterone on or yeah. off, testosterone mm-hmm. on or off, right? You know, you okay, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
But you're looking at, you know, progesterone cycles, you're looking at, you know, so, you know, it's rocket science, mm-hmm. really. And you really need to get someone who understands it, who isn't woo-woo-y, right?
Right.
You know, you really need to, you know, look at when I need to add a little progesterone cream myself, when I need to take it off, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, a lot of like the hormone replacement clinics for men will do this thing. What they want to do is be the one that gives you the testosterone replacement therapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to do it every week. So they go in and they jack guys up like every 2 weeks or once a month.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So what happens is they get this higher dose, their hormones skyrocket. They feel like, you know, their blood pressure goes up and they feel a little over aggressive and a little crazy. Then they spend the next 2 weeks of the month crying in their, yeah. you know, to TV commercials, right? Mm-hmm. Because they go up and they go down, and then the estrogen goes up and the testosterone goes down. And it's what they've created is kind of the female cycle, right?
Yeah.
They're going up and down and up and down and up and down. And it's, I don't have an answer on that, but I can say that, you know, there's people that really do understand it, and you've mm-hmm. got to find somebody who's not like, you know, like when experts will tell men, well, it's bioidentical hormones. There's no such thing as a bioidentical hormone for a man. You know,
yeah,
testosterone, yeah. testosterone, it's the same molecule. It's in your body or where
exactly.
you put it in.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. It is not bioidentical because they're all bioidentical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where that matters for the female is they're not matching the hormones. They're matching the cycles, right?
Right.
So when different progesterone or estrogen goes up and down, they want to keep that more evened out, right? Mm-hmm. And really postmenopausal, if you get it right, women tend to become leaner and stronger.
Sure.
You know, so it, you know, it can, and sometimes the exercise is a deterrent. So, you know, it's tough. You know, yeah. if I had an easy answer for that, I'd be a billionaire.
Oh yeah. What I've discovered, you know, just in talking with Kimberly and seeing what she's going through with her supplementation, her diet and yeah. so on, what she's dealing with is there are many more hormonal levers to pull for
levers,
women
yep.
than there are, as you were kind of implying, is that
yeah.
there are many different aspects of women's sex hormones that can be turned on and off or increased or decreased. And it's a much more complicated process of finding a balance between all of those various hormones then quite frankly it is for men who are on hormone yeah. replacement, where it's much more straightforward. It's one or two things. If you're beyond wanting to have children and you just want testosterone replacement, you get the testosterone replacement, you get on a regimen with that yeah. where it's not necessarily once a month or once every 2 weeks, which is as you were saying
yeah.
a massive mistake, and too many doctors yeah. are prescribing that. But once you get on that plus maybe an aromatase inhibitor to keep yeah. your estrogen in check, then problem solved. But for women, it's so much more complicated, and there's shockingly not much by way of reliable studies when it comes to women's hormone replacement.
No. And I mean, it's funny because the medicine, you know, when you talk about, you know, the racial bias in medicine, then mm-hmm. we can go to gender bias, which yeah. is, you know, all studies start with males and then they kind of, you know, translate them to female without really doing the female study. Right. So la-di-da. And as to what you're saying is that the female hormone reproductive system or hormonal system going on in life is more like a dance, where the men's well-being, you know, still intricate, you know, in some ways could really watch stuff, is more like a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can hit it with this. I mean, you can tell a lot by, you know, I mean, just the, you know, top line testosterone number isn't the answer, but it's certainly a guiding principle mm-hmm, moving
exactly.
forward. you know, and, you know, me, I've talked to you about this over time. It's like the number of men that I've, you know, first thing I'll say is, okay, you want to work together? Go get your blood work. Here's where it is. Order it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a couple $100. It's not a couple thousand. You don't go ask your GP. My favorite is guys that go to their general practitioner doctor and the doctor will resist doing a blood work, you know, which is absurd, right?
Yeah.
You know, well, you don't need that. And then they do, they look at it and your testosterone top line comes back 205 and they go, well, you're good. Yeah. What the frick is good? What the fuck is good mean? That doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Good? Good mean you're not dead yet?
It's amazing that we're still so much in the dark ages when it comes to hormone replacement, Sean. And that's a story that, you know, it's got to be experienced by so many men. And, you know, like, quite frankly, so many women, too, with much more complicated solutions. Yes. But with men and GPs, they just don't get it. They don't get the peaks and the troughs and when you get tested is so important too, the day and the and so these are all things that get missed, and then they go and they prescribe 200 milligrams in a single dose for your entire 2 weeks, and then, as you said, you end up in that roller coaster, which is worse than not having it at all, as far as I'm concerned.
exactly I mean, then you get side effects on both sides of the swing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know having done this, you know, probably 500 times over the last 15 years with guys, it's like, it's amazing if you take a guy who's, you know, I mean, and, you know, I mean, I don't know, 70, 80% of guys over age 40 have got some sort of impairment hormonally, you know? I mean, it really, you take a guy 45, 50 years old and you get normal testosterone levels and they go from living in a fog and a haze to turning the lights on again.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And they'll, you know, they'll cure depression, their cognitive abilities comes back, their vitality comes back. And among my favorite lines I picked up from a guy I worked with years ago, he said, I didn't know how much better felt until I felt better.
Great way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't, I mean, it's like trying to describe meditation. People always say, well, what's the purpose of meditation? And I said, you know what? Can't really tell you that, but if you sit long enough, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you'd be sitting there one day, you all of a sudden go, oh, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you still can't describe it to people. It's an intrinsic experience, right? You know, and you can't tell somebody what's going to happen when their body comes back online, their mind comes back online, and they start feeling like, you know, not like I'm 20 again, but just feeling normal again.
Right.
It's like, you know, people, I mean, there's a reason why we have antidepressants, because there is such thing as real freaking depression.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give a person who's depressed the right antidepressants, they can come back online. And when they come back online, they're like, oh my God.
Yeah. What was I missing? Jesus.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the things I say. It's like, you know, when people get overstressed or overburdened, or they get in a cycle, a ruminating cycle, or everything's bad in the world, or God, I've watched too much MSNBC or whatever it is, right?
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah. Hello. You know, that's like, I always go, thank God they closed the night with Brian Williams so I can laugh a little, you know?
Sure. Oh, man. I mean,
he's the greatest comic relief on television, you know?
Yes, that delivery is
that
everything.
Wit, the wit and the wisdom. It's just so good.
But, right.
You know, I always say, get yourself a good night's sleep and wake up the next day and look at the problems you had today. And you're like, what was the big goddamn deal?
Oh, right. Yeah. One of my favorite things that I learned in Hawaii, when I lived in Hawaii for five years, was, oh, I'll just worry about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that's a recipe for severe procrastination, but the philosophy of it is fun, I think.
Yeah.
Useful.
Well, and that brings another one, which, you know, this is part of the Trumpism era for me, has been to realize that when I get frustrated with people, places, things, or what's going on in the world, it's like, I can go out to the gym. Mm-hmm. I can take my frustration. I can take a headache that's got my blood pressure up, go train and walk out of there going, God damn, I feel good.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, because you literally work the anger and the hostility out.
Mm-hmm.
You just flush it out of your body. And it just, you know, it's taking that thing, that catalyst, and moving it into force, getting against resistance and breathing it out.
Yep.
and you come out and the whole world looks like, hey, man, that's cool. I feel good, you know, you know, and it's it, what some people might use a beer for, right?
Yeah. And for me, you know? With bike riding, it's talk about eliminating all of the other noise. It's just me and the topography of whatever roadways I'm on at that period of time. It's like extremely therapeutic. There's something about that simplifies everything.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I like riding, you know, from the standpoint of I like riding sometimes with people. Like I have social friends that ride and I like meeting some people that ride, but I can go out by myself, which I do most of the time, and still feel like I belong to the tribe because, you know, it's like every person you pass by, you give them the thumbs up, the wave, you know, the wave. It's like, hey, we're all riding. We're all bikers, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you know, if you belong to the, you know, the spandex tribe, and if you've got your riding gear on, you know, it's like, you're, you know, if you're clipped in and you're stretched out with your spandex, you know, people recognize you as there's somebody who cycles, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So let me ask you, Sean, before we wrap up here, just out of curiosity, do you think your full strength shakes are ever going to make a comeback? I mean, are we ever going
to
see those again?
I want to in a deep way. I mean, the you know, being on hiatus for a couple of years has been, you know, both, I think right now, good for me because the market's been a disaster with the whey protein creation.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, the further I am away from us not having it, the more I'm convinced that it was the game changer I always meant it to be.
Yeah, it
and,
was.
I mean, it's a unique product that built with such integrity and quality, and there's nothing like it in the world, and nobody can replace that. And you know, me, I'm a believer in a daily shake. Mm-hmm. I think it's an ultra convenient, reliable, consistent way to simplify and maximize and optimize your nutrition.
Oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I do a lot of ways right now. I tell people, you know, I've got my, you know, right now without full strength, I really like my Ascent protein. Some guys from Denver here that are doing a really high end called a native way, which is, you know, one single process way, and they make a great way, but it's not a full strength shake. It's not a complete, you know, 58 ingredient shake. I mean,
right.
You know, I was talking to my brother and he does a good shake, but not, it's not full strength. I mean, I had 830% the potassium of daily RDAs, right?
Jesus. Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah. 6 grams of fiber in there, you know, you know, I mean, it's like, it's, you know, the insulin balancing nature, the energy nature. And, you know, one of the things that I think is so important, like for me, the full strength was always my morning shake. And what I tell people is, you know, people know this, it's like, you know, this is a fact, is that you have so much decision-making capacity in your life every day, right? So it's like lifting. Every time you make a decision, whether it's a big decision or a small decision, it depletes from your reservoir of the ability to make a next decision, right?
Right.
So when you get up in the morning and you have a full strength shake, because that's what you do in the morning, you don't have to make a decision. You don't have to decide what eggs you're going to do. Mm-hmm. You don't have to decide what you're going to make.
That's
you,
right.
You just literally move. You're out. You're on the way. You're, you know, you're up and away, as Dr. Seuss would say. You know,
yeah, you know, for me, they tasted better than anything else that I had bought up to that point by way of any sort of diet supplement. I mean, as far as the full strength shake goes, I actually used to make those for dessert. I mean, not only would I have one in the morning, but I would have one sometime between dinner and going to bed. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. And it was just one of those things.
It's so good. Mm-hmm. It's so good. Well, and that's part of the, you know, the trick, the, what I did with the flavoring systems and the, you know, we sprayed our flavor on after processing. We did a lot of things that changed the nature of the shake. And, and you know, because, you know, it's the, you know, as I can attest to, by losing my sense of taste and smell, is that your sensory smell is 70% of your taste, right? Mm-hmm.
So which is fascinating because I don't have a sense of smell. I was born with anosmia, so I can't smell anything, but I can still taste this. I mean, it still tastes great.
Well, and that's the power of it. Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, you know, I mean, when I lost sense of taste and smell, I said, it's kind of like going deaf and blind, you know, I'm wandering around everything I put in my mouth. I'm like, what the hell is that?
It's God, that's gotta be the worst. Yeah.
Awful. It was like, I'd be trying to eat something and just gagging myself to death. I was like, oh, it's weird. Just weird. But that's,
it's an incredible product, Sean. And I know it's not really in your plans as far as marketing something like that again right now, but damn it. If you ever come around to taking another look, please let me know.
I could go fund me, you know, $2 million probably on that damn thing, you know? But I want to be in the right place in time. I'm going to get book, go to Zen of Strength, build that. I've got a couple, you know, I got a creatine line that I really want to launch, that I'm want to really bring the creatine to the masses as a more of a health energy product. Cause I mean, every single day, cognitive abilities, life extension, you know, energy enhancement, you know, more science comes out every day on the power of creatine. And creatine, you know, it gets relegated to a muscle building world, not to a daily energy product. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to bridge that gap between, you know, and there's a lot of things, you know, I mean, building a nutrition shake is, you know, a little like splitting the atom, you know, the margins suck, you know, I mean, it's not the most profitable thing on earth, although it's the most reliable thing on earth. So, you know, you got to kind of blend together those, you know, you got to put the whole piece together. You got to make enough money to keep feeding people full strength shakes without making any money on them.
Yeah, right, right. Well, you know, I absolutely need to get you back on the show soon. And certainly when the book comes out, when you're done with the book, let me know. Where can people follow your work, Sean? Where can people check out, you know, everything there is to know about Sean Phillips?
Well, you know what? I actually have nothing up right now, Bob. I really don't. I mean, my Strength for Life isn't up right now. I mean, I really took Trumpism to the extent, you know, really put my head in a box. And but, you know, I'm still on Medium, you know, under Sean Phillips. And I'll send you a couple of links we can put on the show notes, and I'll send you a bio. It gives you a kind of overview. And you can always find me on Amazon under my Strength for Life book. And I am in the middle of one, or towards the end of one project, which is I created a, you know, kind of as my coming back into world grounding, I did a complete 10-year retrospective on Strength for Life, where I did an audio read on every chapter with a 10-year retrospective, looking at the things I would change, the things I love, the things that sustained in the world of conscious fitness, right?
Yeah.
And I did that as kind of as a way to get back to, you know, because Strength for Life is kind of like my magnus opus. It's my seminal work of conscious awareness, integrated fitness. And it reminded me, you know, like when you go back, I'm sure you've done this, you go back to some of your work, you go, damn, I wasn't altogether too damn stupid, was I? You know?
Well, you're lucky, because when I look back at my work, I'm like, it's like when you look back at your old yearbook photos, like, I can't believe I made my hair look like that. What's wrong with me? What the hell was I thinking?
Yeah. But it, you know, it's given me a real grounding and, you know, appreciation for my work. And it's given me that foot forward. And, you know, I took a real integral look at this. I looked at, you know, me, body, mind, and self, and how it applies. And so I'm giving people both an audio of every chapter of the book, kind of delivered like a podcast, with a separate PDF kind of outline of taking action and what's in this chapter. And then a look back at, you know, what in fitness, health, nutrition, mindfulness has changed in the last decade. Yep. And so I think it's going to be a real tool for people. And, you know, the tough part about writing a book like Strength for Life is 80% of the people pick it up and turn to the workout and think the workout's the answer, when really it's the knowing about the self, know thyself, is the part that matters more than the workout.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, God, it's so great talking to you, my friend. And seriously, best of luck to Bill. Keep me posted on Bill's progress too.
And I will do. And I'm you know, I'm going up there and training bands with him and doing some workout every day. And we go up there and I make sure he gets foods and I make some power shakes for him and, you know, so go deliver that. And he's getting better every day and, you know, getting stronger every day. And, you know, I think it's going to take time, patience, and compassion. And I appreciate it. It's great to catch up, Bob. It's good to hear your radio voice, which is always soothing. And you're in my ear for a lot of my bike rides. And
Okay.
That's I keep the left ear clear so I can hear the cars and the right ear with a good podcast. So
sounds great.
And okay, you've been integral to me staying sane during the Trumpisms.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, right, well, brother. Take care of yourself, and we're gonna talk to you again real soon.
You too, Bob.